You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday the 25th of June 2020, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting live today at RadioAlbion.com, because we have with us geopolitical analyst Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson from RussJournal.org. Matt, good afternoon to you. I hope you're feeling better than you were last week. How are you doing today?
Yes, I'm living the dream. you know, I still haven't gotten my stimulus check yet, but apart from that, no problem.
Well, it's great to hear that. Higher spirits today than you were last week. And we've got an interesting subject to talk about today. We're going to be talking about John Bolton's new book, because of course this is in the news at the moment. I believe the book is actually banned. Is that correct, Matt? Is it banned completely, or has it actually been? Oh, it's not banned.
No. The judge said that since it's already in circulation, you know, the Justice Department moved too late to get it blocked. I don't believe he's going to get any money from it, though. It's going to have to go back to the state. But as we know, the judges involved in this, with the cases brought by the Justice Department, says that there's a lot of things that he should not have revealed in this book, especially for a sitting president, which is very rare. And so he is in a lot of trouble. Now, whether it's going to be criminal charges down the road is another matter. But he made a big mistake here.
Well, have you actually seen a copy of the book, or have you just seen selected quotes from it? Have you had a look at it? Have you read it at all?
No, I've read it. Yeah, thank God I'm a fast reader. It's over 500 pages, but it gets very repetitive and you know, stylistic. But yeah, I found it online. It's not a problem. But because the Justice Department waited too long, it's already in circulation. And it's already top of the sales charts. Of course, the New York Times is way up there. So there's no point in banning it now.
Do you think it's a truthful book, or do you think it's just sensational? He's making exaggerations. What's your overall opinion of it before we get into these quotes?
Well, he admitted that he had to destroy all of his notes upon getting fired. We know that Trump and Bolton butted heads throughout their time together over wars in every damn country he didn't like. So he's reconstructing this all from memory. And the way that he constructs these logical arguments is very bad. Things that people wouldn't normally say. He draws conclusions that the regime might want to hear, but didn't actually occur. He hears this stuff from a translator 2 years ago, but now, without any reference, is going to claim he remembers it verbatim today. And his contempt for Trump is such that I really doubt that much of what's in here is actually true.
I think Trump is going to rue the day that he took him on board as part of the American government. I was so shocked when that happened. I thought, you know, Trump, you're supposed to be stopping these wars. This is the worst person you could get on board for causing trouble around the world. It just seemed like a suicidal move when he got him on board. And of course, he didn't last for long. He was only there for maybe a year, maybe longer than that. I mean, do you know how long he was actually, what was he, defense advisor? I mean, just the worst possible position for him. How long was he actually part of the administration for, Matt?
Yeah, he was national security advisor. I don't remember. It seemed a lot longer than it really was. And that's right. He campaigned on an America First platform, and he brings the architect of the Iraq invasion on board. the ultimate, you know, war hawk you could think of. And it was really, it disturbed a lot of people. So, you know, so I think, yeah, it was maybe a bit over a year, I think.
Well, he did plenty of damage in that time, didn't he? Well, let's have a look at these quotes then. The first one seems to be a quote that really gives us some insight into Trump, actually. It says, because, however, the axis of adults had served Trump so poorly, he second-guessed people's motives, saw conspiracies behind rocks, and remained stunningly uninformed on how to run the White House, let alone the huge federal government. The axis of adults is not entirely responsible for this mindset. Trump is Trump. I came to understand that he believed he could run the executive branch and establish national security policies on instinct, relying on personal relationships with foreign leaders and with made-for-television showmanship always top of mind. Now, instinct, personal relations, and showmanship are elements of any president's repertoire, but they are not all of it by a long stretch. And I was actually quite pleased to hear that he's going on instincts, because, you know, that's what I think people should rely more on, instincts than what they're being told by these advisors. If people relied on instincts, they would realize that the emperor is wearing no clothes. So I tend to see this quite positively. And I'm interested in this terminology he is using, the axis of adults. It's rather like the axis of evil terminology from World War II. What do you make of this quote, Matt?
Yeah, that refers to the people around him. The one thing you could say against him is that he didn't hire very well. But they didn't also have a huge impact on his decision making. There's nothing wrong with personal relationships with foreign leaders being a cornerstone. What Bolton's saying here is that he's not imposing an ideological grid onto the world and forcing everything into that. Of course, the conspiracy thing, it made me laugh. And second guessing people's motives is normal, mature behavior. And no one knows how to run the White House when they're elected. No one's been president before. And he doesn't run the federal government. That's what his cabinet and their underlings do. So this is just a very superficial attack on him. But there's absolutely nothing. And his showmanship hasn't been very good. He's not like Reagan, and the media tears him apart anyway. The thing is, that's the only thing that matters to him. It's ridiculous. That couldn't matter to him, given how the media treats him.
Well, doesn't this kind of say that John Bolton, he was part of the axis of adults as well? I mean, he was one of the advisors. He's really sort of insulting himself there by using that terminology. Well, the next quote that we've got here concerns Germany. Trump clearly believed that the only way the Allies would spend more is if they thought the United States was leaving, which didn't bother him because he didn't think NATO was good for America. Stoltenberg tried again, but Trump continued to say that too many NATO members were not paying and repeated his fear of the United States entering World War III on behalf of one of them. Continuing on the theme, he asked why the United States should protect such countries like Germany and thereby bear a disproportionate share of NATO expenditures. He repeatedly asked why the United States should pay, complaining that the Allies laughed behind our backs when the United States was absent, mocking how stupid we were. Then we were on to Ukraine and the Crimea, with Trump asking if Russia hadn't spent a lot of money in Crimea, which he wouldn't have allowed them to do, although Obama had. Why should the US risk war? Trump wondered. And Stoltenberg answered that Ukraine was different since it was not a NATO country. Trump responded that Ukraine was very corrupt, and the breakfast finally came to a close. He reassured Stoltenberg that he was with him 100%, noting that he had supported extending Stoltenberg's term as NATO Secretary General. Still, the other allies had to pay up now, not over a 30-year period, and in any case, our spending was going down to Germany's level. By this point, Mattis had turned to me and said quietly, "This is getting pretty silly." Shortly after which, Trump said he was telling General Mattis not to spend more on NATO. Stoltenberg said in conclusion that we agreed on the fundamental message. Now, I find this interesting for a couple of reasons. I mean, America is in Germany because Germany has been a client state of the Allies since the end of the war. Germany is not a sovereign state. I mean, that's the reason these bases are there, not to protect Germany, but to ensure that Germany remains under America. And I also find it's good here that Trump points out that Russia had spent a lot of money in Crimea, because, I mean, obviously they had. It was something like 95% Russian, actually, in Crimea. But what are your thoughts on this quote here, Matt, about NATO and Germany and Trump's thoughts on it?
Well, I included it because it's all over the place. You know, he doesn't even quote him that they laugh behind our backs. I don't even know what he means there. Spending money, I assume he means investment in Crimea. Of course, he's absolutely right on Ukraine. And there's nothing wrong with NATO going out of existence, which, of course, for Bolton would send him orbital. And we've been saying, I remember the Pat Buchanan's campaign in 92, one of the main foreign policy planks was to force these other countries to spend more money for their own defense. You know, they have the welfare states that they do because they don't have to spend the money to protect themselves because they have the U.S. And General Mattis has already condemned this book. He didn't say this is getting pretty silly. There's a whole bunch of people in the Foreign Service who said that they never said these things. And of course, Trump, you can't tell him to spend more money on NATO. It's budgeted one way or the other. So this is all over the place. It shows Trump in a very positive light, in my opinion.
Well, I think he has every right to ask for more money from these countries that are paying, I mean, what is it, 0.5% or something? And America's paying 5%. Do you know what the exact ratios are, Matt, that the costs are for NATO?
Yeah, not off the top of my head, but the U.S. pays a huge amount. It's really an American alliance. And some of these smaller countries like the Netherlands, you know, have a very small percentage, even though they've been a free rider with NATO for a long time. It's just not necessary anymore.
Well, the thing is, I mean, America pays all that money because it's America's presence in Germany. I mean, I think the biggest complaint in Germany is how Americanized it is, and they see that it's run by America. Even the American NSA were bugging all the politicians in Germany, and they could do nothing about it. And since the end of the war, that's just been the way that it is, and that's why there are all those bases there. And I guess Trump doesn't understand that, so he's looking at it and saying, "Well, all this money is going to Germany," but it's not really. All that money is going on providing this American overbearing presence in Germany. And I guess that's why he gets annoyed that Germany is doing deals with Russia for gas and things like that, because, he's quite right to say that Germany should really be paying them a bit of money when you think about all the things that America sees it as, that America has actually done for Germany. Well, I brought up Russia there. Let's have a look at what he has to say about Russia and President Putin. I thought we might actually be okay for a while. A US reporter asked Putin why Americans should believe his denials of interference in our 2016 election. And Putin answered, "Where do you get this idea that President Trump trusts me or I trust him? He defends the interests of the United States of America, and I do defend the interests of the Russian Federation. Can you name a single fact that would definitely prove the collusion? This is utter nonsense." Then, after showing more knowledge about Mueller's recent indictments than might have been prudent, Putin raised the 1999 Mutual Legal Assistance Treaty. Putin misnamed it, or it was mistranslated during the press conference. Although he had concluded by then, this must have been what he had raised in his one-on-one with Trump. Putin said Mueller could take advantage of the treaty, and Russia should also be able to take advantage of it to pursue Bill Browder for his alleged crimes, as he had related to Trump during their encounter. Putin's description of what might be possible under the treaty was a long way from what it actually provided, but by the time we explained it to the press, Putin had scored his propaganda point. Well, I think Putin was being quite reasonable there, and he was calling America's bluff, basically. He was saying, look, if you think there's anything illegal has gone on, we have this mutual legal assistance treaty. You can call people to question them, the same as we can call people to question them if we think we've got a problem in Russia. You're welcome to have these people if you want to question them. But of course, they didn't want to do that because there was nothing that they could actually prove in this. And this is, you know, where is this evidence of Russian collusion, and why there was no evidence? That's what the Mueller report discovered. So what is John Bolton doing presenting this idea that there was this collusion. I mean, he's supposed to be on, he was supposed to have been on the side of the Republican Party. And what he's saying here is that he's actually against them. I mean, that's the two points that it strikes me about this quote, Matt. What are your thoughts on it?
Well, he does say in the book that there's no evidence for collusion. I don't think any rational person can claim that. But given his agenda in writing this book, he's still going to make it as negative on Trump as absolutely possible. It wasn't a propaganda point. It was simply a point. And the assistance treaty, which I had completely forgotten about, makes it so easy to demonstrate this, as you mentioned. And even the NSA report on the collusion, I think even Bolton was head of it at the time, doesn't say anything about manipulating presidential election numbers. It has more to do with the Democratic nomination and RT functioning in the U.S. That's all it was, and bots and trolls and people like me. That's all it ever was. So this whole thing is absolutely ridiculous, and Putin has never been answered when he asks, "Can you give me one thing?" But saying that, you know, do I trust him? Does he trust me? And Putin is saying, you know, there's sanctions on my country from him. He's sending military aid to Ukraine. How pro-Russian could he be? If you remember when he was first elected, they had, you know, Putin was really the president of the U.S. and they had a marionette with Trump as a, you know, being manipulated. And it's ridiculous. The U.S. is as anti-Russian now as it was under Obama.
You know, over in Russia today, I think it was, or yesterday, they had their victory parade that they have every year, the patriotic parade that brings Russians together, a big show of patriotism. And the BBC were reporting it, and they were saying, critics are saying that Putin has arranged this parade just because he wants to increase the amount of people that like him, as if to say that he's desperate for approval. And the man has at least 50% approval. And they're trying to say that, oh, he's only got 50% approval at the moment, and it's really bad, and that's why he had to have this parade. And he's trying to have a new constitution made, which means that he will be the president of Russia forever. And the whole point of the constitution is that people will get to vote on that. And if they want him to be president for another term, then that's democratic. The people have decided that. And to have a 50% approval rating, if that's true, that's still better than anybody in the West. But he did have a much higher approval rating, I thought, a few years back. So what's happened to Putin's approval rating? Is it correct that it's only gone down to 50%, Matt?
I was just simply going to say that he rarely goes below 70%. The Western polling agencies will always report the absolute minimum they possibly can. And they've been doing this for a long time. There's no particular reason for him to have lower approval ratings. He's one of the most popular politicians in the world right now. But to claim that's the reason he had this parade that they have on a regular basis, is to get supporters. You know, it's an insult to Russia. It's an insult to him. It's a silly. It shows you how the press is. They're such an infantile level that they will say anything and do anything and make the most ridiculous arguments to make their enemies look bad. And you know, Bolton doesn't help matters here.
Oh, it's ridiculous the way the BBC go after Russia. They were saying that they were deliberately putting out fake news. They had a half-hour program on Russia putting out fake news, and that what the story was about was basically a bookstore in Latvia that said that Mein Kampf was the most looked-at book in the store. And it was basically on the internet, and people have been clicking on that, and they were saying, well, this is fake news. And they didn't show that it was false evidence, and they had the BBC reporter even ask Putin about it. I mean, an absolutely ridiculous story, just so that they could have a half-hour program trying to say that Russia puts out all this fake news. The anti-Russia propaganda is, you know, it's everybody's got to be able to see it. And the whole narrative of this being collusion and messing around with the election in America is false. But another country that we also hear a lot of false propaganda about is China. And the next quote comes from China. More thunder out of China in the form of the coronavirus pandemic came in early 2020. Although epidemiologists, not to mention biological weapons experts, will be studying this catastrophe long into the future, the mark of China's authoritarian government and social control systems is all over it. There is little doubt that China delayed, withheld, fabricated and distorted information about the origin, timing, spread, and extent of the disease, suppressed dissent from physicians and others, hindered outside efforts by the World Health Organization and others to get accurate information, and engaged in active disinformation campaigns, actually trying to argue that the virus and the disease itself did not originate in China. Ironically, some of the worst effects of China's cover-up were visited on its closest allies. Iran, for example, looked to be one of the worst hit countries, with satellite photos showing the excavation of burial pits for the expected victims of COVID-19. Well, his evidence there tends to discredit what he's actually saying, doesn't it? If one of the closest allies, Iran, was actually one of the worst hit countries, then that kind of says that actually this wasn't a deliberate plot by China to harm itself, basically. I mean, you know, the Chinese economy has been knocked out just as much as the American economy and everywhere else. What do you make of all his bluff and bluster about China here, Matt?
Well, there's no citations here. There's allegedly there's a phantom intelligence report saying that they're, you know, understating their casualty rates. I don't know why they would do that, but the WHO was very clear. I mean, their health database is international. Doctors can access it at any time. The Wuhan lab is an international body. There are scholars from every country, every industrialized country on the planet that work there. Wuhan itself is an international city with its own private free press. You couldn't suppress anything. It just simply isn't possible. I mean, if they couldn't suppress the fake Tiananmen Square massacre in 88, or Soviets couldn't suppress Chernobyl, then these guys can't suppress this. It's a silly trope that they keep bringing out. And I don't even think the originating in China wasn't even the issue. That was never an issue because the Wuhan plant is purely international. The lab, with investment coming from major corporations in the U.S. and the U.K. and Germany and the rest of it. So, and of course, it is, you know, it destroyed their economy. And then now, of course, they lifted all their travel restrictions, meaning that if they're lying, then they're killing all these people. And it's just not true. They're back to work. Everything is normal. But it was 2 days after the first human-to-human contact or transmission of the virus that they reported this to the WHO with the genetic imprint. They called it a form of pneumonia. And that's all very public. So they were trying to hide anything. They would have no reason to.
I think they were a little bit late in actually saying that it was airborne. But to be honest, if America and the rest of the world can't see that they needed to stop all flights to China once they saw that China had completely locked down Wuhan, dug up the roads, locked everyone into their buildings, and to prevent it from spreading outside of Wuhan to the rest of China. If the rest of the world was just watching that and thought, oh, well, it doesn't matter, we'll keep flying people in and out of Wuhan, we'll just fly people back, then, it's the rest of the world's fault. You really can't blame China for anything to do with this virus, because they did just by their actions alone should have told us that we needed to completely isolate China and completely isolate Wuhan, regardless of what they're saying. And it's just rank stupidity that allowed this virus to get out of hand, if you ask me about it. Well, finally, we've got some quotes that conflate the Taliban with ISIS and Al-Qaeda. Apparently, they're all the same thing to John Bolton, even though the Taliban are fighting against ISIS. He says, "This was effectively the last of my involvement in Afghanistan. Since I resigned, Trump resumed talks with the Taliban, which were just as detrimental to the United States as before. Combined, however, with the October withdrawal debacle in Syria, a clear, unforced error by Trump personally, political opposition to surrendering in Afghanistan grew stronger. Nonetheless, on Saturday, February 29th, 2020, the United States and the Taliban signed an agreement that, in my view, looked very much like the agreement that had come unstuck in September. This still being the Twitter presidency, I tweeted my opposition that morning. Signing this agreement with Taliban is an unacceptable risk to America's civilian population. This is an Obama-style deal. Legitimizing the Taliban sends the wrong signal to ISIS and Al-Qaeda terrorists and to America's enemies generally." Trump responded in typical fashion at a press conference a few hours later, saying of me, "He had his chance, he didn't do it." The preceding chapter demonstrates to the contrary that this Afghanistan deal is entirely Trump's. Time will prove who is right, and the full effects of the deal may not become apparent until after Trump leaves office. But there should be no mistaking this reality. Trump will be responsible for the consequences, politically and militarily. How are the Taliban in any way a threat to the United States? It's just a complete waste of money having America over there in Afghanistan. The Taliban were against ISIS, so how he conflates them both together here. And how can you say this is an Obama-style deal when it was Obama that went into Afghanistan and got the West stuck there, basically? And he says it was a withdrawal debacle in Syria. I mean, again, what is America doing in Syria? Both Syria and Afghanistan, America has no business there. It's not, neither of those countries pose a direct threat to America. It's very much in America's best interests to just get out of those areas. But here we see that John Bolton is just a total warmonger because he doesn't actually give any reasons. His reasons are nonsensical, saying that this sends the wrong signal to ISIS and Al-Qaeda, who are both enemies of the Taliban, as far as I'm aware. Matt, what do you make of this?
Everything you said is absolutely correct. Al-Qaeda and the Taliban are opponents. Not militarily, but they are military opponents between ISIS and Al-Qaeda. And during the Syrian civil war, the U.S. allied with Al-Qaeda against the Syrian government. That was actually made official. And that was, you know, that wasn't that long ago. Look, there's a reason that when Bolton was nominated to be the American ambassador to the U.N., you had over 100 diplomats sign a letter to George Bush saying that you can't have him. He's seen as arrogant and extremely ignorant. Everything he says about Trump essentially is really about him. The U.S. was beaten in Afghanistan. They lost the war. The U.S. doesn't have the resources, the men, the money, the material to continue a war that the Soviets couldn't win, that a lot of people couldn't win. And this is what upsets him, I guess. But to throw them all together and, you know, thinking that, well, they're all Muslims, so they must be on the same side, shows his incredible ignorance. He wants permanent military presence there. He wants trillions of dollars being spent there. And he doesn't care how many dead people. I mean, he wanted a war in Iran after the drone was shot down. And Trump said, no, it's disproportionate because you're going to they just shut down a drone. Or their proxies did. But you're talking about a war that will lead to thousands of deaths. And Bolton said that was the most irrational thing I've ever heard a president say. And that began his resignation process. So he simply doesn't care. Even a drone is worth killing hundreds of people, thousands of people, whatever it is. Trump is – and one of the reasons this book is working out for Trump is that people are seeing him more sympathetically, that he was a break on Bolton, and that thank God he didn't listen to his advisors as much as others have. Bolton is a very dangerous man, and to assume that the withdrawal – there wasn't a huge presence in Syria anyway, but the U.S. wasn't invited there, unlike the Russians. They had no right to be there, and they were allied with Al-Qaeda. We all know that ISIS and the U.S. are the same thing. And of course, the Taliban has never been a threat to the American civilian population whatsoever. They can hardly control Afghanistan, let alone threaten anybody. Of all the groups that condemned 9/11, the Taliban was one, saying that there was too many civilian deaths. And they saw, Al-Qaeda, they saw Osama as very arrogant. And they didn't have a good relationship with him. You know, so everything that he constructed over his career have been turned out to be false. And for him to then project all of this onto Trump is outrageous. Of course, this is being done just before the election, but it's actually ricocheting on him, not just because now he can't make any money off this book. He may be in trouble, but also Trump looks good now. But thank God Trump was able to restrain even the Nation, Slate. I read all their reviews on this book, and they're saying, thank God for Trump. For the first time ever, they're saying positive things about him because of this book. This book is an absolute disaster for Bolton. He wasn't in the room. Pompeo was in the room too, and he said it's not true that these things weren't said, these things weren't done. So many of the outrageous statements that he claims Trump made. It's a disaster. This book may actually be one of the better things to happen to Trump recently.
He's like a cartoon villain, isn't he? John Bolton. Very, very, very predictable. Just before we finish, Matt, what are the things that he shouldn't have said? What are the things that the state secrets, as it were, that are supposedly in the book? Is there anything exciting in there?
Well, reading the book, I was thinking about that. And the disposition of American forces he does mention. He talks about presidential musings about the future, about strategies against whether it be, you know, Iran or Russia for the future. He does mention this stuff. He doesn't release – I didn't see anything that would be dangerous necessarily. He doesn't mention any CIA members' names or anything else. But he does talk about the American disposition in the world, both in terms of intelligence and military, which he probably shouldn't do. So I didn't see anything that struck me particularly outrageous. But maybe I'm missing something there.
Well, you shouldn't be talking about military strategy or really sort of demeaning America's strength anyway, if he was the national security advisor. Anyway, thank you very much for coming on today, Matt. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Grandpa Lampshade. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.